Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
United Nations, His Excellency Barack Obama, President of the United States of America, and I invite him to address the Assembly. Your Excellency, have the floor, sir.
Good morning. It is my honor to address you for the first time as the 44th President of the United States.
That's it. That's the whole square
of the expectations that accompany my presidency around the world. Now, these expectations are not about
me. That's enough already. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Give him a couple of chips. We'll see him in the casino. Look, I'm going to do inventory on the Savage Nation today. Here's my inventory question to you. I want you to call the show and tell me what you don't want me to talk about. If you feel very strongly, you don't want to hear any more about X, Y, and Z, or I feel very strongly you're not covering A, B, and C strongly enough. I mean, do you think I criticize the president too much? Tell me why. Don't say don't do it. You have to tell me why. Or do you say I'm too good to the president? And you got to call the show and tell me why. And it doesn't have to be limited to Obama. Admittedly, he is the hot button issue. Admittedly, I am quite critical of his neo-communistic policies. And I'm very clear about that. On this program, I have called Obama not a neo-con, a term quite fashionable during the Bush years, but a neo-communist. Traditionally, in countries such as the Soviet Union, Cuba, North Korea, this meant complete state control of culture and the economy. But I got to inform you, many communist states today, such as China, have hybridized their state control of the economy with a limited amount of capitalistic freedom. So the apparent freedom that people have, for example, in China, is not the freedom you are used to. Because the Chinese Communist government does not allow freedom of speech, does not allow freedom of religion, does not allow freedom of thought. In other words, if you criticize the Communist government in China, you're not going to survive. So while it is not identical to the Iron Heel communism of Stalin, it is communism. It's a weird hybrid of communism. It's a capitalist slash communism. Now, like its cousin in China, Obama's neo-communism does not seek complete state control. You can go to whatever church you want. Just make sure it doesn't speak out too loudly against the administration. You can write whatever you want. Just don't expect to get a publisher if your views are too strong. You can make billions of dollars on Wall Street so long as you make the right campaign contributions to the Democrats. Now, it is true we don't have commissars in America, but we have czars in America. We don't have a Politburo, but we do have a political correctness. And while we don't have purges, we do have poll surges carefully constructed by the neocom media. And so again, I invite you to help Michael Savage do inventory on his program today, something that any businessman understands. And talk radio is in some ways a business and a calling, but it's still a business. You're the audience. You're the buyer. You're the consumer. What do you want me not to talk about? What do you want me to talk more about? The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. Would you like to hear more politics, less politics? Would you like to hear more goofing around, less goofing around? Would you like me to, do more family stories? How can I make them up? I've written them in Psychological Nudity. I can. Would you like me to talk more about banning Britain or never talk about it again because you're tired of hearing about the banning of an American patriot by a democracy, even though this has never happened before in history? You're not interested because you didn't hear it on the Carpetbagger show. Because the carpetbaggers who wrapped themselves in the flag didn't talk about it, therefore it doesn't exist. So whatever you want to do, let's go to San Francisco, KSTE. Christine, welcome to the Savage Nation. Thanks for calling the show.
Hi. I think you need to cover Band in Britain until you're off that list, number one.
Thank
I was
you.
More than happy to sign that petition and send it to all my friends.
Oh, boy.
I think you could even talk more about Obama. He's ruining our country, but I think overall you cover all the issues very well. I appreciate who you are, and what you cover is very good. Your humor, your stories are great. I would like to hear more about all of the czars.
Tsar Nikolai. I can't do the song I would sing because it's a family show. I know a Russian song about czars that I learned as a little boy from many of the white Russians who had escaped the red communist Russians, who used to dance and sing a certain song called Tsar Nikolai, and if you're a Russian listener, you know the song. Unfortunately, I can't sing it on the program because it's dirty. 1-800-4- It's actually very funny. I never understood the words till I got older. By the time I was too old to... Whatever. Nothing's funny anymore. Everything's funny. Nothing's funny. Is Obama the menace that so many conservatives think he is? Or is it racial? Is it paranoia? Is it... Have you noticed what's going on in this country? Any criticism of Obama, where they tried the race card, it backfired. Even Obama said, don't do it, it'll kill us in the next election. Even he was smart enough not to do that. But the minions of Obama, the little men, the straw-haired man, for example, on MSNBC, softball, the man who flacks for the Democrat Party and got away with it all these years, the man who was nothing but a cast as friend, or Immelt, the owner of a General Electric, who just did a deal. I read 3 months ago that GE got $1.2 trillion in deals through Obama's green energy czar. And now we read that General Electric was just given the green light to do a project in Russia through Obama. And in exchange, NBC and MSNBC are nothing but fronts for the Obama administration. Now, I recognize that you find that hard to believe, but do you have any idea how dangerous this is? To see a network that was once so phenomenally important to be owned lock, stock, and barrel by a Democrat president? Do you understand that? And do you realize every time you hear attacks on so-called civility by one congressman after another saying that talk radio is responsible for the lack of civility, that means we're getting to them. That means these lying SOBs don't like the fact that we're pointing out the thievery that they are conducting on the American taxpayer. That's our job, damn it. That's our only job. And the day we can't do it is the day freedom dies in America. The day these bureaucrat hack commissars in America called congressmen and senators who are attacking talk radio and bloggers, the day they succeed is the day freedom ends in America. And it's the day that your freedom ends in America. Make no mistake about it, ladies and gentlemen. I will repeat it until you finally get it. It is from the Freedom of Speech Award that I gave in 07 to the Talkers Magazine Group. I told you that the mark of a vigorous democracy is contentiousness and debate. The more contentiousness in a society, the more freedom there is. The less contentiousness there is, the less freedom there is. It's a factor of reality if you study the world's history. Wherever there is no dissension, there is absolute totalitarianism. Where there is unbridled discontent and an exchange of ideas with angry rhetoric, then you understand you're living in a free market of ideas. And the day this free market of ideas dies, the day you start catering to the Politburo members in the government media complex, is the day that freedom dies in America. Now, no one knows more about free speech in America than I do. Nobody. I am the canary in the minefield. They picked me. They wanted me to leave radio. They wanted me to go away. They're trying to destroy my syndication one station at a time. You think I don't know what's going on? The problem for me, and I'll lay it on the line, the strength of my situation is you. They never expected the reaction they got from the British press and the British people. I cannot say the same for the American press and the American people. We are actually more of a dictatorship than Britain is right now. There's more press freedom in Britain than there is in the United States of America. There is more outspoken criticism of Obama coming out of the British press than out of the American press. The people are 80% with Michael Savage and 20% on the side of the labor socialist government. Here in America, there's been no talk about my dilemma, except in limited circles. Certainly those who wrap themselves in the flags of conservatism, you would expect to be talking about freedom of speech. They don't. And I'm not going to harp on that anymore. I won't harp on it anymore. All you got to do is go on to michaelsavage.com and sign the petition right now. I don't need the golfer. I don't need the wall banger. I don't need these corned beef baloney guys. These corned beef malarkey guys are worthless. They're worthless, worthless, worthless. They can take their corned beef and shove it. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Trouble's just a bubble, and the clouds will soon roll by. Let's have another cup of coffee. Let's have another piece of pie. Let a smile be your umbrella, for it's just an April shower. Even John D. Rockefeller, looking for a silver lining. Mr. Herbert Hoover says now's the time to buy. Let's have another cup of coffee.
We back
Let's
on the air or not?
Piece of pie.
Is that how would I know?
Everybody wants it. It's the universe.
Leave it on, leave it on. Let me hear it for a minute.
Want coffee?
Give us coffee.
Reminds me of the cartoons when I was a kid. Popeye cartoon.
If you've got a time, then you can have a dandy time.
Dental chair cartoon.
Oh, I want coffee.
Give us coffee.
With a dental chair, that's a little side note.
Let a smile be all
that was very big, the dental chair. That was early.
Even Johnny Rockefeller.
What dentists are always... It's not all, but... Even when I was a kid, dentists were allegedly with the gas, and women didn't know what exactly went on during that twilight time. That's why people are afraid of going in a dentist. It's from the movie, The Dental Chair and the Anesthesia. Well, no, today they all have a nurse in there. But today, who knows with the nurses today, what's going on? Maybe the dentist leaves the room and the nurse stays. The whole society is upside down. You talk about the barbarian invasion. It's worse than the barbarian invasion of China, what's going on in America. In terms of the invasion of our souls and our minds from the left-wing demons, this is worse than the barbarian invasion of China, the barbarian invasions of China of the 4th and 5th centuries. I don't know if we could ever recover from what they've done to our soul. Anyway, let's get back to what I was talking about. San Francisco, KSTE. Elliot, thanks for the call. What's on your mind?
Mike, I would love to hear more of the historical lessons you have to offer.
Well, I just said the dental chair today, what went on to our minds in this country from the invasion of the pornographers, the invasion of the mind screwers in the schools, is worse than the barbarian invasions of the 4th and 5th centuries in China.
I mean, I don't have a frame of reference for that. I need more
education. I know. It's a little big sweep of history. But you got to understand that China was early on. I'm going to talk about China in another period. China was invaded by barbarians in the 4th and 5th centuries, and what happened was their prosperity and social stability and civilization, which was far ahead of contemporary Europe, collapsed. It was only because of the invasions that their civilization collapsed. Does that sound like America today in a certain way, Elliot?
It's getting there.
Yeah, I don't mean it's collapsed, but wouldn't you say that our level of prosperity, social stability, and civilization is less today than it was 20 years ago? Let's put it to you that way.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, and if you were to follow the arc of this civilization from the terms of social stability and prosperity, on the arc that it is on, particularly if you look at what's happened to the media and how demented it is, you have to say in 20 years what's going to be left. You have to ask yourself. We need a Tang, like a leader called Tang, who ushered in one of the great ages of Chinese history. Because Tang brought back the prosperity and social stability and civilization that was China before. And it was only another wave of invasion from Inner Asia, this time the Mongols, that brought this era of well-being to a halt again. And the fact of the matter is, another dynasty came along hundreds of years later, called the Ming Dynasty, that reversed these setbacks and put China back on the course charted by its Tang predecessor. So what am I getting at? I'm getting at the fact that countries, like people, like individuals, ebb and flow. And this country is now going through a downturn. It's been going through a downturn for a very long time. Many people would say the downturn started sometime in the late 1950s with the advent of the communism and the perversion ushered in by the triumvirate of Allen Ginsberg, Timothy Leary, and that lawyer I mentioned. Remember I mentioned a triumvirate of three people who ruined America? If you had to name three people who brought about this collapse, the societal collapse and social stability, it would be Allen Ginsberg on the cultural level, Timothy Leary on the mind level for introducing lysergic acid diethylamide to the masses, convincing whole waves of young people that getting stoned was the answer, you know, turn on, tune in, drop out. And then there was a third one, the one who did the Freedom Rider bus thing. He was a straight lawyer from New York, and he got the nookie on the bus and the patchouli oil. He never became the same. He left his wife for all of the free love girls. I forget his name. He went over the River Hades with the other two. But it was those three who put this downturn in action. I mean, I can name four or five more. It was Supreme Court decision by the great pornographer. I forget his name already. What was it, the penthouse guy? I don't remember his name. Larry Flynt. He was the one who brought pornography to every neighborhood with, again, a fork-tongued lawyer who said that it should be up to community standards. And you know, speaking about community standards, look what happened as a result. There is porno in every household, in every corner, in every hotel room because of Larry Flynt's community standards. That's exactly what the FCC wants to do now. They want to introduce the equivalent of political pornography into your head. They want to take a guy like Michael Savage off the air who's super literate, super passionate, and super conservative, and they want to replace it with so-called diversity, which means pornography. That's what they're doing. When I say pornography, I don't mean X-rated pornography. I mean political pornography. Political pornography in the form of day and night propaganda about the greatness of the great one. 1-800-449-8255. See, it's the espresso again that I had. Every time I do this, it's a sacrifice for you, the listener. Because if I have an espresso before I go on the air, the show is phenomenal. I'm more eloquent. I'm more loquacious. I'm more focused. The firing order is much better. In other words, the timing is better. It's like setting a racing engine, a V18, in perfect tune. However, I pay for it because then I'm strung out at the end of the show. I'm so, like, way up there on caffeine, and I can't have a drink. Because if I follow up a caffeine up, with alcohol of any kind, I got a migraine for 2 days. So, okay, you know what I mean? I do it for you. That's all. So let's have a great show, and I'll worry about being strung out tonight on on caffeine. That's all. So what do you want me to do? More of this, less of that, less of this, or more of that?
Savage.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender.
Dedicated to a Barack Obama, goes out from the Savage Nation. It is the Savage Nation. I don't know how he gets away with it. Sometimes I say, am I the only one? They're laughing at him all over the world. The only people. Do you know that he's to the left of the United Nations on most issues? Are you aware of the fact that our president, our current left-wing president, is to the left of the United Nations on most issues? You don't even understand this. The people are such idiots, they don't even understand history. Here you had the most left-wing senator in American history who was hiding his communistic tendencies. But remember, he was only a left-wing senator from Illinois. Now, all of a sudden, through monies we don't even know where it came from, we have some suspicion. Well, one of his fundraisers is indicted the other day for a $300 million bust out of a couple of banks. But don't worry about it. I guarantee you the banks were bailed out by his friends on Wall Street. You see how it works? The guy is now to the left of most of the dictators in the U.N., It's unbelievable how you don't see this. I'm flabbergasted. And then you have the minions in the media. Oh, all of the people in talk radio are uncivil. They're uncivil. You're damn right we're uncivil. You call it civility to lick this guy's boots while he's destroying everything in the United States of America as fast as he can? Surrounded by czars who no one knows who they are? You're faking it, Chris Matthews on MSNBC. You fraud you. You straw-haired dunce you. You worked for the Democrats your whole life, and now you're a naked flack for the Obama administration. Who listens to you on the air? Nobody. But you see, they don't care because their boss has done such a big deal through the Democrats that their salaries are assured. So don't expect the truth from NBC. No, expect it from ABC. And if that's not good enough, you expect it from CBS. See, this is the problem. So you have independent outlets like talk radio, and everyone is attacking us. Left, right, and center, we're all being attacked. And that's what they want. And I'm telling you, the day that talk radio dies is the day freedom of speech dies. That's all I can say to you. That's how I see it. That's how I see it. So again, what would you like me to talk more about? And what would you like me to talk less about? Because I guarantee you right now, let's say a government edict comes down that says you can't talk about politics on one side, whatever. You have to have both sides of every issue be like, you know, fake. I don't have to do politics. I have a bigger audience than ever. Most of the others would go out of business because they're one-note Johnnies. They can only do Democrat, Republican, Republican, Democrat, and that's the end of it. If I had to, I could play rock and roll. I could do cooking. I could do cooking. I could do menus. I could do rock and roll. I could do a little science. I could do poetry. I could read history, and I'd still have a good show. Wouldn't matter to me because I have the capacity, because I have the education. I'm proud to admit it. What is an education worth other than the ability to take the education and to share it with others in a friendly way, in an entertaining way? Otherwise, what? Take your education and, you know, throw it out the window. What good is an education? I'm highly educated. I'm overeducated in some ways. But I use it. I try to spread it out there. It's a gift. It's a blessing. Remember I did last Friday a Jewish New Year sermon? It's interesting to me that only Christians called to thank me. Jews didn't. That's the interesting part, to show you what's going on in the world here. I write a Rosh Hashanah sermon. I get one call after another from good Christians and email after email thanking me. I don't get one letter from a Jewish person. So, all right, that's the way the world is. I don't expect anything from anybody. I do it because I think it's the right thing to do. I thought it was a decent piece. I put it on the website. I got an email today from an Orthodox rabbi who says, Michael Savage, he said, can I please have that translated for you into Hebrew? I actually asked him, to be frank. I remember now. I said to him, can you have a Hebrew scholar take my words and translate them precisely into the Hebrew? And then I want a Kabbalist, that's a mystical Jewish scholar, to read the Hebrew version of my English sermon, and I want the Kabbalist to tell me what the white between the darkness and the letters says. Then I'll know what I was saying. And the reason I said that to you is that if you studied the Kabbalah, unlike a certain 50-plus singer, dancer, hooker look, who's of course calls herself Kabbalah to sell holy water, if you actually talk to Kabbalists, as I have done over my years, and I'm certainly not one myself, it's a mystical Jewish sect going back to the 13th century. They will tell you that the message from God, the messages from God, are to be found not in the black ink of the letters, but in the white spaces found within the black ink in Hebrew. This is an amazing statement. Now, of course, it has double meanings unto itself. So when I write a sermon in English, I have no idea what the translation is going to be in Hebrew. Moreover, I don't know what the translation is going to be in the whites of the letters in Hebrew. And the day I find out, I will share it with you. So to me, this is also talk radio. It's also interesting to me. And if you don't like religion, we can do horoscopes, which I still read every day. I have an addiction to reading Sally Brompton. Because so many times this horoscope is... And I know the Bible bans it, you know, don't go to... Whatever, what can I do? I mean, if I'm not a biblical, you know, absolutist. If I were, I would have been stricken dead at birth. It's a terror. Sorry, God. I'm not joking. I'm just a fallen, I'm like everybody else. Last update, today's Mars-Jupiter link-up is full of potential, especially if you're the sort of Aries who acts fast and likes to be first. Anything is possible if you want it enough, so put a name to your desire, then go out and get it. Who's going to stop you? All right, terrific. I have no idea what that one means. Some of them, you know, have no meaning at all, so I don't read them every day. Two English bulldogs, male and female. Oh, it's in a classified ad. Then a guy with abs, you take a supplement, then you look like him. Tika Dukic, amateur boxer. Would I want to look like that in the mirror? It's terrible to look that way. What if you're ripped like that without an ounce of body fat on? You can only go downhill from there. You could never have a taco again for the rest of your life. It's better to be kind of in good shape but not perfect. It's like everything else. It's better to be fairly successful but not too successful, because if you're too successful, there's only one way you can go from there. And as Jimmy Durante said, you better be awfully nice to everyone you meet on the way up, because you're going to meet them all on the way down. I love that one. There goes the voice for the day. It's true. It's true how that works. In some fields, it's true. Not in my case, because I'm a recluse. I don't know anybody. And because I don't know anybody, who am I going to meet on the way down? very funny. So Oh, here's the callers. In San Francisco, 650 on the dial. Richard, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, God bless you. I think you should keep the program exactly like it is. I think if you followed a more structured format, it might become something other than what it is. And I love the way you go from religion to politics to the glint in an animal's eye and to meatballs in the next breath, and it all comes together.
Beautiful. Well, that's very nice. I mean, I try to just follow a flow inside my head, my soul, whatever, because I know how hard it is to listen to talk radio. Everyone is busy. Everyone's got to make a buck. There are so many options today compared to when I began in 1994 in radio. You know, I got to go back. Look, Richard, first of all, thank you. But let me say this. In San Francisco alone, there were 72 radio stations when I began, and no one had heard of me. And I made a name for myself moving to number one in news and talk after a few years. Okay, I understand that. But you look at the blizzard out there in the media in general, from cable channels to iPods to whatever, it's astounding to me that people listen to talk radio at all when you consider all of their options. And so therefore, you have to keep it moving and you have to be diverse in your thoughts or people are going to tune out. I mean, how much can I just be didactically telling people that Obama's a neocon, which he is, and explaining that the czars are indicative of the man's tyrannical tendencies and so forth and so on, until people say, I heard that, goodbye. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. I work by myself all day long, and you keep me thinking. You keep me on my toes, and I appreciate it.
Well, did you sign my petition yet, Richard?
Not yet. Our hard drive crashed, and we're currently without a computer, but as soon as it's up and running, I am definitely there.
All right. I hope everyone listening to this show will sign it. It's free. Your name is not going to be shared with anybody, and you can even click Don't Inform Me of Anything, and you'll never hear from me again. But the fact is, on my website, michaelsavage.com, all you got to do is put in your name and your email address. We have 15,000 signatures in one day, and I think that's very good for a small show that doesn't exist. That is not recognized by anyone outside the listenership. 15,000 signatures in a day is very significant. And when I hit 50,000, we're going to send it over to the Senate and the Congress and try to get them behind this campaign for free speech. It's as simple as that. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. Let's go to New York City. Let's go to WOR. Tom, thanks for calling. Tom, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Michael Vasco, surgeon from New York. I just wanted to say, I know people are getting sicker, but you got to keep. That's really the only thing we have, you know. I don't know.
Well, I talk to people from time to time, and the ones who know what's going on say to me, "How could this man be dismantling everything in this country so rapidly without an outcry? How is this happening?"
Yeah. Well, look, I speak to doctors all day, every day, and with the exception of a few real lefty people, there are absolutely no people. None of the physicians are in support of the bill and reform. It makes absolutely
but they have Dr. Flax going on television saying how great it'll be. I've seen them. You know, who are those guys?
Well, look, the AMA is not practicing or clinical physicians. These are a bunch of administrators, we all know, which, haven't practiced clinical medicine in who knows how long. Nobody that I know participates in the AMA or belongs.
Well, thank you for the call, Tom. Much appreciated. Now, here's a story that should scare you to your core for one reason. First, the story, British nuclear subs. Do you know that Gordon Brown, the man who put me on the ban in Britain list because I believe in nationalism, borders, language, culture, has just decided to cut the nuclear submarines of the great United Kingdom from 4 to 3. The number of Trident missile-carrying submarines will be cut from 4 to 3. In other words, he's going to eviscerate the British military. Britain is currently committed to building 4 new submarines by 2024 to replace the Vanguard class of boats. But he's going to make an announcement with the pacifist-slash-socialist president of America that will focus on replacing the Non-Proliferation Treaty with an agreement to further defang the United States and Britain by cutting back on nuclear weapons. And moreover, if you look at history, you will see that Brown's new nuclear non-proliferation agreement, which the New York Times calls urgently needed because they're such left-wingers, is actually appeasement and a catering to Russia and China. It puts us in great danger. Yet, this is with precedent. 1939, 1938, that period, we had a Neville Chamberlain. I have to keep repeating it until you hear it eventually. Neville Chamberlain was exactly like Gordon Brown. Neville Chamberlain was, in many ways, Obama's predecessor in so many ways. These were idealistic Fabian socialists who believed that peace could be had by appeasing dictators such as Hitler. Chamberlain came back from Germany, and he said, "The Anglo-German bond has never been so strong. President Hitler assures me that he will not invade another country now that we've signed a peace treaty." The next day or the next month, Hitler invaded Poland. That was after, by the way, at that treaty, Chamberlain had agreed to throw Czechoslovakia to Germany, to Hitler, just the same way Obama just threw Czechoslovakia and Poland to Putin. It's history repeating itself. And what you don't know, and here's the frightening part. I don't use the word scary. Here's the concerning part. Let's use a mature word. Here's the concerning part of the story. All the while, Chamberlain was deballing and defanging Britain. All the while, the labor socialists of the 1930s were trying to stop the development of new weapons, even though Hitler was building his navy and his air force as fast as he could. Hitler was in rapid development of new planes, the ME-109. Hitler was developing weapons the world had never seen before. All the while, Chamberlain and the labor socialists were trying to gut the British military, signing peace treaties. In the shadow government, there was a great man named Winston Churchill who was building weapons, working with the manufacturers, building the plane that would save England from the German hordes in the Battle of Britain with the great Spitfire. He was building the Navy. Where is our Churchill? We have a Chamberlain in the White House, but where is our Churchill? We don't have a Churchill. We don't have a shadow government waiting to take over. We have a bunch of patsies and phonies in the Republican Party. Show me one leader on the other side who is a vociferous, muscular opponent of the Obama pacifism. Name him. Please don't say the word Romney. I will throw up. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Another talk with the German Chancellor, Herr Hitler. And here is the paper which bears his name upon it as well as mine. We, the German Führer and Chancellor, and the British Prime Minister, have had a further meeting today and are agreed in recognizing that the question of Anglo-German relations is of the first importance for the two countries and for Europe. We regard the agreement signed last night and the Anglo-German naval agreement as symbolic of the desire of our two peoples never to go to war with one another again.
Now, the British were rightly happy to hear that they would never go to war again because they had lost so many men in World War I. So many men, 3 million British died in World War I for nothing. So, of course, they were glad to hear from the Labour Party leader, Chamberlain, that there'd be no war with Germany. It was wishful thinking, however. And, of course, soon thereafter, at that agreement, at the time of that agreement, he threw Czechoslovakia to Hitler without firing a shot. The same way Obama just threw Czechoslovakia and Poland to Putin without firing a shot. So if you don't understand what Santayana, the great Spanish philosopher, meant when he said, "Those who do not know their history are condemned to repeat it," I think you're starting to get an idea of what that means. My friends, we are repeating history. Suddenly it's 1939. It's like 1939 all over again. Only this time there is no shadow conservative government in the United States of America that is protecting our back end and protecting our national security interests, so far as I could tell. Where is the shadow conservative government in America? You're going to tell me it's John Boehner? You're going to tell me who? Who is the shadow conservative government? Where are they defending? Where did they come out and attack Obama when he threw Czechoslovakia and Poland to the wolves, to the bear? They didn't say a word. They went along with it. Where is the shadow government? It's on talk radio. It's on talk radio. You're listening to it. We are the shadow conservative government. which is why both parties want us silenced. Don't you understand that with the great development of choice in this nation over the last 20 years, with the choices you have as to where you get your news on the internet, talk radio, whatever, the newspapers have collapsed, the networks have collapsed, and they don't like it. They want their interests maintained. And so they're going to Big Brother. They're going to Obama. They want a newspaper bailout. Next, you'll see a network TV bailout. Of course, you're going to see a radio bailout if they get rid of inconvenient talkers like Michael Savage. And then you'll have this homogenized, apparent freedom of choice. It will not be freedom of choice. It'll be one homogenous continuum of the same government media message. So as I say to you, UK plans to cut Trident fleet a nuclear overture. What? Gordon Brown is surrendering one of Britain's four Trident submarines to help Obama in his desire to create a non-proliferation, nuclear non-proliferation message. My friends, now you know why Michael Savage was banned in Britain. Why would someone who has never committed a crime, never appeared as a defendant in a criminal trial, never been accused of an actual crime, be banned from Britain? While real criminals, real murderers, real terrorists are welcome with open arms, it is because they want freedom of speech to end in America. They want all nations where such freedoms exist to dampen down these freedoms under the dirty veil of political correctness. And my continued dedication to the principles of borders, language, and culture should seem no threat to any nation that has always been diligently aware of their national identity. My friends, I may not be a dignified Britisher. I may not represent the soul of Savile Row. But my friends, I do represent the Bronx cheer that I grew up with. And that's freedom. That's freedom of speech.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Can give you an absolute and unconditional assurance. There was no deal on oil. There was no deal on anything else. There was no double dealing. There was no conspiracy. There was no prior agreement or anything. This was a decision that we did not have control of because it was made under the law of our country by the devolved Scottish administration. And I just want to assure people there was no deal.
This morning, I had another talk with the German Chancellor, Herr Hitler. And here is the paper which bears his name upon it as well as mine. We, the German Führer and Chancellor, and the British Prime Minister, have had a further meeting today and are agreed in recognizing that the question of Anglo-German relations is of the first importance for the two countries and for Europe. We regard the agreement signed last night and the Anglo-German naval agreement as symbolic of the desire of our two peoples never to go to war with one another again.
So history is repeating itself with Obama as Chamberlain and, of course, Brown as Chamberlain Prime all over again. You got Obama catering to Russia. You got Obama catering to Iran. You got Obama catering to North Korea. You got Obama catering to China. You got Obama throwing Czechoslovakia and Poland to the bear. you've got one parallel after another. And yet at the same time, you have a British Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, who is a total failure, an abject failure at every turn, and yet it gets worse. Just the other day, he says he's going to cut back on his Trident nuclear submarines that Britain was going to build, further defanging the British Navy to the point where it can no longer defend its defend the island nation. It's astounding to me what's going on right in front of our eyes. And at the same time that this is going on, as I said in the last hour in the Savage Nation, we have unfortunately, no Churchill in America. Admittedly, there was a Chamberlain who was defanging and gutting Britain's military might in the 30s, but there was a Churchill who was building the Navy and the Air Force. That's when the Spitfire was developed in the 30s, against the wills of Chamberlain. The great battleships of Britain that fought so valiantly in World War II were built during the 1930s, not as the result of the Obama of their time, Chamberlain, but as a result of Churchill. We have no Churchill in America. Name one Churchill, one opposition figure. There is none. The only opposition to Obama is to be heard on the internet, is to be heard on talk radio and read on the internet, which is why now all of the fangs are out. That is why they are attacking talk radio more viciously than ever, because we are the shadow government. We are the only opposition. The Republican Party is has been neutralized. The Republican Party is, frankly, one and the same, two sides of the same coin. You flip a penny, you have a head. You flip a penny, you have a tail. So the heads and tails of politics have been Democrat-Republican from the beginning. And as one of our founding fathers wrote, the party system shall be the end of the death of America. There is no chance for a third party of any merit right now because the monopoly is too strong. And that's why we are in such trouble today in the United States of America. So again, you've heard all of this, right? You know all of this. So I'll go back to what I asked you in the last hour. I'm going to take inventory of the Savage Nation. And what would you like more of? What would you like less of? What would you like me to never talk about again? What would you like me to only talk about or talk more about? I think it's very important that I ask you this. I open myself up to criticism, but that's necessary. It's like any good business. What does the customer want? So I'm asking you, what do you, the customer of talk radio, want more of, and what do you want less of? 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to Mississippi, a place you rarely hear from in talk radio. Paul in Mississippi, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
How you doing? Hats off to you. I like all the subjects you talk about. Don't change a thing. The one I want to add is, let's see what would happen if everybody paid their credit cards off and just got slammed rid of them.
It's interesting you should bring up the credit card, Paul. I have in my hand an Obama card. These were produced and given out at the rally in Washington 2 weeks ago. It's a picture of the imposter in chief with a microphone. It's called an Obama card. It says life. Do you understand, of course, what it means? It says, congratulations, you are the proud owner of an Obama card. This card will allow you to solve your financial problems in the same way that President Obama has found and failed to solve America's financial turbulence. Borrow, spend, give to Acorn, and so forth and so on. So the Obama card says life costs nothing because the man has never run anything. He has never run a business. Here we are. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. More of this, less of that. Less of this, more of that. Tampa, Florida. Dean, you're next up. Go ahead, please. What are your likes and dislikes?
Hey, Dr. Savage. I'd like you to talk a little bit more about the Western culture versus diversity and multiculturalism, especially from the perspective of Socratic method or Aristotelian logic, those kinds of things.
Let's start at the top. I can do this rather briefly. I am the son of an immigrant, so I'm in favor of immigration. I'm just against unbridled illegal immigration. Does that so far make sense to you?
Oh, that's a great start. You bet.
Now let's go to the next statement that I'll make right off the cuff without having to read any cliff notes on it. The next step is, because I started the immigration debate in radio in 1994, let's go to the next level. I'm in favor of controlled immigration. The next step is I need a national dialogue on which immigrants we want. what shall their education level be? Do we want more Europeans or more people from Asia, Africa, and the Middle East? Does a nation have the right to determine the destiny, its demographic destiny, or does it not? Or shall we leave that to the elites? They have cut off the flow of immigrants from Europe, and they have increasingly increased the number of immigrants, for example, from Asia, Africa, and the Middle East. Do the people want this? Did the people say that they want more the nation to look more like Mexico, for example, than it did like France? Were the people asked in a questionnaire before the gauntlets were opened by the late Senator Ted Kennedy, do you want America to look more like Mexico or like Italy? No, they were not asked. And there's a reason that they were not asked, because the answer would have been loud and clear. And so, again, I'm in favor of legal immigration, orderly legal immigration, but I'm also in favor of a vigorous national discussion as to not only the demographic makeup of the nation, but also the financial makeup of the nation. Do you want all poor immigrants? Or do you want to tell people, yes, you're welcome to come here from X, Y, and Z countries, but you have to bring a minimum of $100,000 to the country or you're not coming in because we're broke and we can't afford you as a deadbeat. We can't afford any more deadbeats. We need you to come here and start a business or buy a business or support a business. Wouldn't that be a rational way to go about an immigration debate? Of course it would be, which is why Michael Savage is so dangerous to the social order. It's because he believes in borders, language, and culture. He believes in reasoned debate, not autocratic secret decisions made behind closed doors. That, my friends, is the sum total of my raison d'etre, my reason to be. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Back in a minute.
Savage.
Just out a few minutes ago, Acorn is suing the filmmakers who exposed, through the hidden camera video, employees giving tax advice to a man and woman posing as a pimp and a prostitute. The radical left-wing anti-American group Acorn, in my opinion, contends that the audio portion of the video was obtained illegally because so-called Maryland law, that's an oxymoron, because Maryland law requires the consent of both parties to record private conversations. The employees seen in the video, Tanya Thompson and Shara Williams, were fired after it was posted online. But they're plaintiffs in the lawsuit, which says they suffered extreme emotional distress, blah, blah, blah. The lawsuit names James O'Keefe III and Hannah Giles, who played the pimp and prostitute in the video, as defendants. And I said it was coming. I said it when Andrew was on the show. It also names conservative columnist and blogger Andrew Breitbart of Los Angeles, who posted it on his website, biggovernment.com. Breitbart said he would respond with his lawyer to a request for comment. O'Keefe and Giles cannot be reached. Asked by Fox News earlier this month about the possibility of a lawsuit, O'Keefe said, bring it on. O'Keefe said it's not in their interest to attack me and Hannah. Well, I guess they disagree. In the video, the pair claimed they had planned to employ teenage girls from El Salvador as prostitutes, and one of the Acorn employees suggested that up to three of the girls could be claimed as dependents. You know the whole story by now, right? Anyway, the lawsuit claims the video damaged Acorn's rep and asks for injunctions barring its further broadcast. It seeks $2 million in compensatory damages and $1 million for Acorn, $500,000 for each of the two former employees, as well as $1 million in punitive damages from each of the three defendants. Here it comes. Andrew D. Freeman, a lawyer for Acorn, Thompson and Williams, said the former employees did not wish to comment, but that the emotional distress claim is not an exaggeration. Thank you, Mr. Freeman. You're a real, real prize to your family and to your descendants. You're really a great prize to your antecedents, Mr. Freeman. May what happens to them happen to your descendants unto the fourth generation, Freeman. Freeman said they're doing their best not to watch television. They've sort of been prisoners in their own homes. In other words, they're victims. You hear this? You hear this? Everyone, they're a victim now. Maryland's wiretap law is sometimes called the Linda Tripp law. Why? If you remember, Linda Tripp, a Maryland resident at the time, was indicted but not prosecuted for secretly recording telephone conversations with former White House intern Monica Lewinsky, in which they discussed Lewinsky's affair with former President Bill, I did not have sex with that woman, Clinton. ACORN, which stands for the Association of Community Organizations for Reform, now bills itself as the nation's largest advocacy group for the poor, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, the videos did have some effect on Capitol Hill, where the pork barrelers in the House and Senate voted last week while rolling in the pork to deny federal funds to ACORN. Maryland does not fund the group, so there it is. That's the story. I saw this coming. I told Andrew it was coming, and of course things happen. You know what happens, don't you? You know. Play some music. That's a sad story. Tennessee, Frank, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Mike, one of the things I enjoy very much about your program is when you talk about your boyhood in New York. I'm a 70-year-old Italian-American born in Brooklyn with a smattering of Jewish relatives, and it really brings back good memories when you speak
so
about
that. So what in the world are you doing in Tennessee, witness protection or what?
That's basically it. That's what I tell the people when they ask me.
No, with your accent, Tennessee, I mean, you know you can't get any food.
No. Italian food is really non-existent down here. Most ethnic foods really are non-existent down here.
What do you have to go to Olive Garden for Italian food?
Well, you know what? That happens.
I can imagine a guy like you going into Olive Garden and saying, "I want I can't even remember the name of it anymore. Some of the rare dishes, let's say, whatever." But, Frank, you like more, let's say, stories from psychological nudity. Did you ever get a copy of the book, Frank?
No, I haven't, Mike, to tell you the truth.
I'm going to send you a free copy of Psychological Nudity. Is that your wife in the background hectoring you?
Yes, she is. She would really feel honored to say hello to you.
What's her name? I want to hear her name.
Her name is Jean.
And you guys came down there together on witness protection, or you met her down there?
No. We're in the casino industry, so we both came down here on the witness protection program.
Well, it must feel like it, even if it's not true, Frank.
Yep. I have a son out in Reno, Nevada, who's also in the gaming industry, and he's a big fan of yours, listens every night.
All realists are. Any realist in America loves this show. Even if they don't agree with me politically on some of the points, they love the show because they know it sounds like their relatives talking to them.
Well, it is, and the enjoyable part about your show, it's not all, Republicans bad.
That's right. So let's see. Of all the stories, which do you like best? Tippy dies and is thrown in a garbage truck, Fat Pack. I bet you like Fat Alan the Tuna makes the tuna.
You had a fellow on from New York one night who just kept on telling stories, and you related to him very, very well. I can't.
Oh, Fat Al's Tuna, but I remember that. Well, look, here's the fantasy I have, Frank, which is I know the government is listening to this show. They listen to every word. And they know that I'm a little different than the other, guys in the radio. Let's put it to you that in a nice way. My thought is that in a couple of years when Obama creates the internment camps for conservatives, I get a choice. They're going to say to me, look, Savage, we don't want to put all of you away. The hacks don't have to go because they'll switch coats as fast as I can say Barack Obama. It won't be a problem with the corned beef guy. It won't be a problem with the golfer. They'll become diehard government supporters just by... But with you, Savage, you don't even have to do that. We'll let you stay on the air as long as you only tell stories from New York. That's my fantasy, Frank. You think it'll happen?
I'll tell you, I wouldn't mind it. I'd still be a big fan.
Yeah, let me tell you something. It's a fantasy because these people are not nice people, Frank. You know and I know what they're all about. Frank, stay on the line. I'm sending you a free copy of Fat Al's Tuna, The Electric Blue Saddle Stitch Pants, and 72 Other Stories from Psychological Nudity. It's a great book. I love doing this book. I did that last year it came out, and it was actually, I love that book, Psychological Nudity, with a picture of me and Teddy with the white Panama suit, the Gucci hat. When I'm walking around now in San Francisco, which I do rarely, they don't know who I am because I'm in radio, but the minute they see that Gucci hat and Teddy, they come up to me and say, are you Michael Savage? I say, no, but he's Teddy. And I get given away by the dog. God, I love the animal. This is sick. How could I love a spirit like this? I call him an angel with fur. What else can I call him?
Savage. Why are we against Taliban? Why are we against Afghanistan? Who's Taliban? If Taliban wants to make a religious state, okay, like the Vatican. Vatican, does it constitute a danger against us? No. It's a religious country, very peaceful. And if Taliban wants to make an Islamic Emirate, who said that Taliban is an enemy? Those terrorists who hit New York, the city that were known, are they a Taliban? Are they from Afghan? They're neither Afghan nor Taliban. Then why Iraq? Why
okay,
Afghanistan?
Okay, so that's Gaddafi giving hours of speeches today. And what's striking me is Gaddafi, I was trying to say, who does he look like? He looks like Mel Brooks with a camel. I could not place him. Every picture that appears with that kind of smile looks like Mel Brooks, with a head covering and a little haircut, like a hippie haircut and a camel. I couldn't believe it. I said, look what he's, as he's gotten older, he's once a good-looking guy, Gaddafi. Look what happened to him. But look what happened to his mind. Listen to clip 21, what he said today at the UN.
Medicine should not be sold, should not be a commercial business. You should make a declaration that medicine should be free of a charge.
Hold it. That medicine should not be a commercial. Hold it. Let's stop right here. I know a little bit about this. Here you've got this lunatic from Libya saying medicine should not be a commercial business. They should be free. That sounds like Obama. Now, can you name one medicine that was ever discovered or created in Libya? Can you name one medicine that was ever discovered or created anywhere in Africa? Can you name one medicine that was ever discovered or created anywhere in the Middle East? Of course not. And yet you have a man like this babbling on that medicine should not be a commercial business, they should be free. It costs about $1 billion to discover a medicine and get it through all of the FDA processes. For better or for worse, most of us would not be alive one way or the other without modern medicine, and I try not to use them except when I absolutely need them at the at the end of the road. Usually I use diet first, then I use herbal medicine, I use vitamins every day. But the point I'm making is that without medicines, most of us would be much sicker or dead. And they are a commercial business. Without the profit motive, without the investment of $1 billion per new drug, an NDA, a new drug application, till you get a drug out of it is about $1 billion. Who in the heck is going to develop a drug if the cost is so high? Is it going to be Gaddafi in Libya? Is it going to be the strong man of North Korea? Yeah, no, they wouldn't do it. He then goes on and says vaccination should be given free of charge. And then he gets crazy. Sounds like Reverend Wright. He says capitalist countries create the virus. Play the whole soundbite. You won't believe this.
Medicine should not be sold, should not be a commercial business. You should make a declaration that medicine should be free of a charge, that vaccination should be given free to children, so that capitalist countries capitalist companies make the viruses and make the vaccinations, and they want to make a profit.
Holy, he says we create the viruses. Now, this is almost exactly what Reverend Wright, Obama's Reverend, said. They're all on the same page. Listen to Reverend Wright.
The government lied about inventing the HIV virus as a means of genocide against people of color. Government's lie.
So in other words, Obama's in very, very familiar ground here, on familiar ground. He also would like medicines should not be a commercial business. They should be free. But who's going to pay for them? Who's going to develop them? He also would agree that capitalist countries create the viruses and then the medicine to generate a profit. It sounds exactly like the same script that Obama was fed by Reverend Wright for 20 straight years. Now wait, Gaddafi, then goes on about Israel in 22.
The two-state solution is not practical. From now, these two states are totally overlapped. You cannot even create a buffer zone between the two states because the West Bank has 500,000 Israeli settlers, and what is called Israel, there are 1 million Arab Palestinians there. So the solution is an Arab democratic, is a democratic state without religious fanaticism.
Hold it. He said the solution is an Arab democratic state without religious fanaticism. Can anyone cite one example of such a nation? Can anyone cite one Arab democratic state without laughing in their water glass? Can anyone name an Arab democratic state that is not religiously fanatic? All right, what is he talking about? Why is there a UN? What in the world do we need a UN for? This UN is worse than the League of Nations. It's really a waste of time. And you know what? I think one of them said that it should be moved out of New York. You know, I agree. They'd have to detoxify the building from all of the illicit activities that have gone on in there, all of the activities that have gone on in the rooms and the broom closets. They'd have to put in a very, very strong detox in the building and turn it over to the homeless. Make the United Nations building a turtle bay into a homeless shelter, because all of the Upper East Side dwellers, you know, are so liberal that they would welcome the homeless from around New York and around the world to live in the UN towers. It would be very fitting to turn it into a homeless tower, because that would be very Obama of you, wouldn't it, to turn the UN? But get rid of it. Send it to China, India. What do we need it for? What good is the UN? What does it do? Well, it does attack Israel and America. Of course, it won't be attacking the U.S. anymore, since Obama's to the left of most people in the U.N. But I made this point before, Gaddafi. I don't know what happens to these guys. An hour and a half of pure, unadulterated propaganda and rubbish. But he's not the worst. Coming to a media outlet near you is Hitler. The Hitler of our time, Ahmadinejad, is coming. I don't know why they let him in the country. I have no idea why he's allowed in. I don't understand it. They don't have to let him in. They could say, no, you're not allowed in. You're calling for genocide. You're not allowed in this country. But we have no one in charge. No one is at the helm. Who is at the helm? Who is at the helm? Well, you know who it is. It's Obama. Obama is at the helm. 1-800-449-8255. Larry in Houston, next up. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I'll be brief. More stories about Teddy, less stories about Barry.
I love it. More Teddy, less Barry. That's short and sweet. Well, it's true, but how many Teddy stories can you tell? I mean, dogs are wonderful, but I mean, they're what can you say about a dog after a while?
Well, I can say that I just got home after an hour's worth of driving from a 12-hour workday. I'm about to go inside to my little Pembroke Welsh Corgi named Brennan. He's the light of my day every day. You can.
The minute you walk in, he's going to jump for joy, isn't he?
Absolutely.
My dog jumps, and I actually can't take it anymore. I said, Teddy, stop it. Then I cut myself off because I say, what would you rather have him, a limp dog laying around who's depressed? You're going to regret when he's older that he can't do it anymore. What are you telling him not to jump for? He drives me crazy when I walk in.
Well, mine is only 6 months old, and I hope he lives for at least 25 or 30 years because I love him every day.
I know. They're the greatest. Does he sleep in the bed with you?
No. My wife and I don't have that arrangement.
I'm sorry. Let's not go there. So where does your dog sleep, Larry?
He has his own bed. We cordon off a section of the kitchen and laundry room, and he has his own bed. And
all right, I understand. I saw a show last night about chimpanzees. You say more Teddy and less Barry. I was watching a National Geo show last night about chimpanzees. Remember the terrible thing that happened a year ago or so in Connecticut with that crazy woman? She slept with the chimp. She bathed with the chimp. Everything with the chimp, like a husband. Now, you know the woman was a whack job, certifiably insane. Not in my time would a woman bathe with a chimp in the last 2 days. She would have been in Bellevue, in the back ward. She would have been studied. The brain would have been studied. They would have studied the brain, but today, anything goes. I told you I would end up. So I don't know whether she was going the extra mile with the chimp, but they say she slept with the chimp. She bathed with the chimp. The chimp drank out of stemware, wine with the woman. So the chimp now goes nuts. One of her friends that the chimp knew comes to the house, and she has a new hairdo and a red doll, and the chimp gives her runs out of the house, rips her face off. I don't want to go into it. Tears her to ribbons. Then the cops show up a few minutes later. Luckily, they had 40 caliber handguns. The chimp rips the door off a police car, and a cop shoots him, and the chimp runs into the bushes, and it shows the cops looking for the chimpanzee. Through the woods, they follow the blood trail. He's in the house. They find he's dead. I mean, it's kind of sad that he died going back to his house to the only jungle he ever knew, which was a synthetic jungle gym that they built for the chimp. The sad thing here is that this woman was allowed to take a wild animal and turn it into a domesticated pet. That's number one. And a dog is so much not that. A dog is a domesticated animal. A chimpanzee can never be a domesticated animal. Never. But the laws in America have been so watered down and warped by, what shall I say, libthink, that we're all equal, animals should have rights, human rights. They don't know what they're talking about. I knew this years ago. Years ago, I lived in Hawaii 30 years ago during the hippie era. And there was a hippie there who was a big LSD user, a real crazy, insane person. I think today he works for Acorn or for Obama and in one of the top positions. This lunatic convinced himself on an acid trip that the animals in the zoo are all captive and they're really peaceful. And if you could zap into their zones, they would leave you. The guy climbs over a cage and goes into a cage, goes over a moat and gets into a moat with monkeys. And a chimp tore him to pieces. And he got out just in time. He was saved by the police at that time. Again, this is the same kind of stupid thinking called liberalism. Liberalism is a mental disorder from the top to the bottom. There's not one thought in liberalism that I could think of that makes sense. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Election, opening a new chapter for our country.
This is Hitler speaking live at the UN. The sweet words as translated by one of his hit women.
They entrusted me once more with a large majority.
I don't want to listen to this man. He should not be allowed in this country.
Responsibility. And now,
in World War II, they hunted down Yamamoto and got him over New Guinea. I mean, what kind of world am I living in? That I have to be insulted by this Hitler speaking in the United Nations? I'm sick of it. I don't want to live in a country like this where Hitler can come to my country and spew hatred and genocide.
All its cultural, political, and economic capabilities to engage in a constructive process aimed at addressing
international... All right, let's stop right here. Here's a country that is torturing and killing the opposition as we speak. Hillary Clinton says nothing. Here is a nation called Iran that had an uprising, a democratic uprising, and this Hitler cracked down on them, and unimaginable horrors are going on as we speak, according to dissident groups in Iran. Rapes, torture, murder in Iran right now. And this SOB gets to come to America and sit there and give a speech, and the shills in the media are going to say President Ahmadinejad of Iran spoke today. How do these people get up in the morning? How do the ABC, CBS, NBC types, how do they look in the mirror? How do they look in their child's eyes? Don't they know who they are and what they become? Aren't they aware of the fact that they're aiding and abetting a genocidal maniac? I ask myself each and every day. And so I don't want to listen to the Hitler. I won't listen to him. I don't want to hear another word from him. Now, I'm going to show you insanity. A crazy group called the Physicians Committee for Social Responsibility, Responsible Medicine, a crackpot left-wing group, is suing Kentucky Fried Chicken, saying the grilled chicken is a danger. They're suing the KFC chain and accusing them of selling grilled chicken with dangerous levels of a carcinogen. Now, what is the carcinogen? PHIP, and it's a byproduct of the grilling process. And they say it's so dangerous that if you eat a KFC grilled chicken, you're gonna get cancer, and they want to sue and this and that. Now, this organization of crackpots has 7,000 lunatic physicians in it, and they made the same argument last year in a suit against other restaurants that sell grilled chicken. Burger King agreed to warn customers of the presence of PHIP, but other defendants led by McDonald's held their ground and won a ruling from an L.A. judge dismissing the case. So you don't have to read the ins and outs of it, but let's look at the accusation against Kentucky Fried Chicken. This group of crackpots and left-wing fanatics says you're going to get cancer if you eat grilled chicken. It's a witch symbol because anybody who knows science knows that this byproduct of grilling called PHIP, dimethyl aminopyridines, PHIP, comes when you heat proteins on a hot surface. It occurs even if you grill a vegetable on a Weber. You get measurable amounts of PHIP, as does every burger, steak, chicken, or other piece of grilled meat you have ever eaten. So this group of crackpot left-wing doctors is substituting hatred for capitalism for sound science. It's a group of radical animal activists who happen to be doctors trying to break another American company that most Americans love. Now, they're not a sponsor of this show. They should be, but they're not. They should be, but they're not because they're afraid of these other pressure groups. But I have to say what the truth is, and I want you to understand that this physicians group is a radical left-wing anti-capitalist organization that does not have science on its side. It has vengeance and hatred for capitalism on its side. So go out and have a piece of grilled chicken tonight. What a bunch of morons. They don't even mention how small the amount of this so-called carcinogen is found in a grilled chicken. Do you know that virtually anything that you put in your mouth can cause cancer or death in excessive doses, even water, because of the chlorine in it? And so they're not talking about it in any reality. It's an amazingly small amount compared to the dose used in test animals. Fact of the matter is, if you want to hedge your bet, you eat the grilled food. I don't eat a lot of grilled food, by the way. I don't barbecue because I know about benzoapyrenes, another byproduct of grilling, and I've known about it for 30, 40 years. I tend to avoid all grilled food. It tastes great. Once a year, I'll have it. I know people who make a barbecue every night. Lunatics. Lunatics. Every night. Barbecue, 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 barbecue. I understand. The heathens like that. On the heath, that's what they do every night. The heathens get out the grill, and every night they spray the Coleman on it. And every night, like idiots, every night barbecued food. Well, you're asking for cancer in that case. You're going to wind up with cancer if you do it every night. But not if you have an occasional piece of grilled chicken or a grilled vegetable or a grilled burger. They're crazy. So what I'm saying is you hedge your bet. If you're going to eat the stuff once in a while, make sure that you take a sufficient amount of vitamin C both before and after you eat it. That's all. Take some antioxidants before and after you eat grilled food. That's the end of the story. It'll soak up the free radicals. So that's one of the things I like to do as a little health talk on the Saturday. All right, go back to Hitler for a minute. Let's talk about a human carcinogen.
Enjoy respect and dignity. That will be the time when mankind's path to moral.
Oh, shut up! Get off my show. I love that Hitler talks about respect and dignity while his minions, his sadists, are raping, murdering, and torturing political dissidents in Iran. See, they always do this. They come and speak about dignity and this and that, and behind the scenes, they're torturing people. Why do you put up with this? What kind of country is this? Can you imagine Hitler coming to New York in 1939 and talking about peace and dignity? Would he have been allowed in New York? Would he have been allowed in? Well, you could say, yeah. I remember when I was a little boy. I'll never forget this as long as I live. Oh, I can't even. What's this? Oh, I have a shortwave radio here. Yeah, hello. I used to like to read old magazines. My father had a store with used things. I would go through old magazines and books. And I used to look at old Life magazines as a kid. I should have been working, and I hear, Michael, what are you doing down there? Okay, Dad, I'm working. I'm not even reading the magazines, whatever. And I came upon a Life magazine from the 30s that showed American Nazis marching with the Nazi flag and the swastika in Madison Square Garden. So I said to my father, American, there was a Nazi party in the United States of America in the 30s? They let them do that? He said, yes, it was called the German-American Bund, and it was created under the guise of being a friendship league. But in fact, it was a creation of the Gestapo. They knew that we were a democratic nation. They knew how to get into the underbelly of America through the law. And so they gave speeches about the great German nation and how peaceful Hitler was, and they had a Nazi flag on the stage, and then they had an American flag on the stage. I said, I can't believe that they let the German-American Bund hold meetings in Madison Square Garden. My friends, history is repeating itself almost down to the symbolism of the 1930s. We have Obama as Neville Chamberlain. We have Gordon Brown as Neville Chamberlain. We have Hitler now being played by Ahmadinejad. The only problem is, my friends, we do not have a Churchill. Where is the Churchill of our time? Where is the patriot with a voice to stand up to this madness before it is too late, entirely too late? Where is the patriot saying, no, we cannot take down our nuclear arsenal in a world like this? Where is the patriot, my friends? You're listening to Talk Radio. We are the last hope for America.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Best article today is The UN Loves Obama Because He Is Weak by Niall Gardner of the London Telegraph. It's interesting to me that the London newspapers are more onto Obama than are our flacks in the press who seem to be owned by him. And they say it's not hard to see why a standing ovation awaits Barack Obama when he addresses the United Nations General Assembly today. And you have to read the article. We linked it up on michaelsavage.com. And they say he's still worshipped with messiah-like adoration at the United Nations, even though his approval rating of 52% may well be lower than any U.S. leader in recent times at this stage of his presidency. And the reason the U.N. worships this man, according to the Pew Global Attitude Survey, is obvious. And that is because Obama's popularity boils down to his willingness to downplay American global power. He is the only American president who has made an art form out of apologizing for the United States, which he has done on many occasions on foreign soil from Strasbourg to Cairo. And the Obama mantra, he writes, appears to be ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do to atone for your country. He said this goes down very well at the UN, a place where anti-Americanism rules. And he said, of course, that's why the UN will embrace an American president who declines to offer strong American leadership. A president who engages dictators like Ahmadinejad and Hugo Chavez will naturally gain respect from the leaders of the more than 100 members of the United Nations who are currently designated as partly free or not free. So there you go. So here we have a president scoring highly at the UN for refusing to project American values and military might on the world stage, with very rare exceptions like the war against the Taliban, his appeasement of Iran, his bullying of Israel, his surrender to Moscow, his calls for a nuclear-free world, and most tellingly to me, his siding with Marxists in Honduras, his talk of a climate change deal, naturally have won Obama plaudits in a large number of UN member states where UN foreign policy has been viewed with contempt. Simply put, Barack Obama is loved at the UN because he largely fails to advance real American leadership. Very dangerous, is it not? Last week, he shamefully surrendered to Moscow over missile defense. The president, he says, is perfectly happy to undermine America's allies and gut its strategic defenses while currying favor with enemies and strategic competitors. The missile defense debacle is rightly viewed as a betrayal by the Poles and the Czechs, and Washington has clearly given the impression that it cares little about those who have bravely stood shoulder to shoulder with their U.S. allies in Iraq, Afghanistan, and the wider war on terror. The Obama administration is now overseeing and implementing the biggest decline in American global power since Jimmy Carter, by Niall Gardner from the Heritage Foundation. There's an editorial today called Worst Foreign Policy Ever. And in it, in the Washington Times, we read that on many issues, Obama is to the left of the United Nations. Do any Americans other than those who listen to talk radio recognize that we have a neo-Marxist president running the country, surrounded by dangerous neocoms, and I said neocoms, C-O-M-S, neo-communists? How come they were able to use the word neocon when Bush was in power with impunity? And when I tell you it's a neocom administration, I'm telling you the truth. Everything this man does is in lockstep with the international communist movement, virtually everything. This editorial from the Washington Times, Worst Foreign Policy Ever, must be seen. It's unbelievable. It says, North Korea has continued to be openly belligerent, testing a nuclear weapon and long-range missile, withdrawing from the 1953 armistice agreement with South Korea, and declaring it will weaponize its plutonium stocks. And the U.S. does what in return, in response? Conceded to long-standing North Korean demands for bilateral talks. And what has that done? That's encouraged the Hitler of Iran to move forward with his own nuclear program. Can you believe this? Actions in Obama's world are consequence-free. Does that sound like liberals to you? The only country the Obama team has tried to strong-arm is Honduras, which is desperately trying to stave off a socialist takeover by an anti-American autocrat whom the State Department has concluded is worthy of full U.S. support. This has delighted Cuban dictators Raul and Fidel Castro and Venezuelan dictator Hugo Chavez, who are very willing to let the United States carry their water. Can you believe this? Meanwhile, Venezuela has signed a major arms deal with Russia and is continuing to build the anti-gringo Bolivarian bloc. Then there is the catalog of Mr. Obama's embarrassing moments on the world stage. You want to hear the list? Giving England's Queen Elizabeth II an iPod with his speeches on it. Giving Prime Minister Gordon Brown a collection of DVDs that were not formatted to the European standard. Calling Austrian a language. This is all the genius Obama. Bowing to the Saudi king. Releasing a photo of a conference call with Israel's Prime Minister Netanyahu, in which Obama was showing the soles of his shoes to the camera. Let me be absolutely clear, he said. Israel is a strong friend of Israel's, saying the United States was, quote, one of the largest Muslim countries in the world, suggesting Arabic translators be shifted from Iraq to Afghanistan, where Arabic is not a native language. Sending a letter to French President Chirac when Sarkozy was the president of France. Holding a town hall meeting in France and not calling on a single French citizen. And referring to Cinco de Cuatro in front of the Mexican ambassador when he meant Cinco de Mayo. Also of note was Secretary of State Hillary Clinton giving Russian Foreign Minister Sergey Lavrov a reset button with the Russian word for overcharge. Here's a big one. Obama will spend more on welfare in next year than Bush spent on the entire Iraq war. Did you know that? As a candidate for president, Obama decried the financial toll that the Iraq war was taking on the economy, yet this left-wing Marxist will spend more on welfare in the next year than Bush spent on the entire Iraq war. You won't read that anywhere or hear it on MSNBC. I want my listeners to go to michaelsavage.com and sign the Savage Petition to Defend Free Speech. It's simple and it's free. michaelsavage.com. Appeal to the good offices of the United States Senate and Congress to act with the U.S. State Department and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton to persuade the British government to immediately remove Michael Savage's name from its list of banned murderers and terrorists. And by the way, it's free. And you sign this petition today and you get a free excerpt from my new book, Banned in Britain, big old fan. We've got to get a million people. They'll only pay attention when the number is big enough.
It starts like this and then it spreads like wildfire. This is one of those
prairie fire things. Well, the heartbreak is that the conservative movement itself is not helping me. That's the real heartbreak, Beowulf. It's unbelievable to me. How in the world could this be happening that people don't understand that without all of us sticking together on an issue like this, we're going to all fall one by one?
Well, those who proclaim loudly to the world that they're conservatives are not helping you, but true believers in free speech on the left or on the right are the ones who are going to help you on this.
Yeah, well, the day I see a left-wing blog circulating this saying, although we may disagree with Savage, we'll help him, I'll believe it. Michael Savage that gives $50,000 to the Las Vegas cops. Did you see that one? Am I blowing my own horn by telling people which charities I'm supporting? You know, I need them to know that in addition to being a talk show host, I'm also a human being, and as a human being, I do certain things that the negative cyber bullies don't ever talk about. So if I don't tell people what I'm doing, who will? Will it be the cyber bullies on the left who are all supported by the Obama minions?
Savage.
Talked about Obama failing to produce a missile defense plan for Europe and the reasons he gave on why he thought it made sense. Joining us today is Baker Spring from the Heritage Foundation, who says the administration's missile defense plans do not add up.
Thank you, Michael, for having me on. I'm happy to discuss the issue of the Obama administration's recently announced decision regarding the abandonment of the missile defense systems that were supposed to go into the Czech Republic and Poland. In my view, the administration's decision was ill-advised, but it also is important that the alternative program that the administration is talking about does not quite add up. And I think that there's three specific problems with it. One is related to how it is viewing the Iranian missile threat and how that threat is emerging. The second has to do with the specific elements of the alternative plan that they've announced, which looks at sea-based missile defense systems and the related Standard Missile 3 sea-based interceptor that they also are looking to place on land. And then the final one is the false dichotomy the administration seems to be setting between defenses against shorter and intermediate range missiles and longer range ones.
Well, what does the actual threat assessment say?
The threat assessment says, according to the administration, that Iran is more focused on short and intermediate range missiles rather than longer range ones. I have never quite heard it described that way before, because I think that most experts look at the Iranian missile development program and look at it as a holistic one. That is one that is pursuing short and intermediate range ballistic missiles and long range ballistic missiles, the latter being revealed in recent tests of a solid rocket of considerable range, and also the successful launch of a satellite. The fact of the matter is that Iran uses tests of short and intermediate range ballistic missiles to also inform their long range missile defense program. In other words, the technologies run concurrently with each other. They're not in neat little boxes, one clearly distinguishable from the other. The final thing with regard to the threat assessment is that they can be notoriously unreliable in today's world because there's considerable international sharing of technology. Let me use an example from North Korea. Some analyses of a recent long-range rocket launch from North Korea point to the possibility that the entire second stage of that missile was derived from a Soviet-era submarine-based missile called the SSN-6. So that when you have these kinds of rapid transfers of technology, the ability of the intelligence community to provide years ahead warning about what a particular country, in this case Iran, will have, are in the end inevitably tenuous. So there is nothing to be gained by delay, including against the long-range missile threat. You would rather be ahead of it rather than behind it.
What about the sea-based interceptor plans?
The problem that we have here is that there is no specifics to the administration's announced alternative plan. Those include out-year funding levels. Those include the specific descriptions of the technologies they would pursue. For example, maybe smaller and lighter kill vehicles to make the maximum velocity of the Standard Missile 3, whether based at sea or on land, is enhanced. They don't do anything with regard to describing how at least the sea-based standard missile system would be made accessible with regard to data produced by other sensors, whether those are satellite sensors, ground-based radar, radars located at sea, as well as infrared capabilities. So that as long as there's no specifics to this program, it's rather difficult to say that the administration has really put in place an alternative program that will be as effective as they at least imply. Now, let me say is that the Heritage Foundation has been a longtime supporter of sea-based missile defense system and the Standard Missile 3 interceptor. And we believe that that system can be made as capable as the administration describes. But until the specifics are there, count me as skeptical about the administration's internal program as it relates to that system. What worries me most is the other elements of their arms control agenda.
Like what?
In the initial instance of the decision to abandon the facilities for the Czech Republic and Poland, it is clear to me that arms control considerations, particularly with regard to U.S.-Russian arms control, were allowed to prevail over basic U.S. security commitments to two important allies. And I think that that political decision is more than just regrettable. But the other thing that the administration is pursuing in its arms control agenda is what is frequently referred to as a prevention of an arms race in outer space treaty, and signed up to a negotiating agenda at the United Nations Conference on Disarmament in Geneva in order to prevent the development of anti-satellite weapons, among other things. Well, the fact of the matter is that in 2008, a version of the sea-based system, including the Standard Missile 3, was used to down an out-of-control United States satellite that posed a risk to people on the ground. It is inevitable, in my judgment, that if the administration is pursuing this arms control agenda at the United Nations Conference on Disarmament, it will have to terminate the Standard Missile 3 program and perhaps the vast majority of the broader sea-based program, because it will be described by that treaty as a prohibited anti-satellite system. So that once again, I think that we could see the risk that arms control will trump U.S. security concerns, as well as the security concerns of U.S. friends and allies around the world.
It seems as though the administration is implying that you can somehow trade short-range defense plans with long-range plans equally.
If you read the administration's fact sheet on the alternative program and the president's remarks and the remarks of Secretary of Defense Robert Gates at a press conference that day, one would arrive at the conclusion, well, the United States never had these sea-based systems before, and the administration thinks that they will work, and so that they're abandoning these facilities for the Czech Republic and Poland because there's now this new alternative that wouldn't be pursued otherwise. That's not true in the least. The United States has been pursuing the Standard Missile 3 program and the sea-based program concurrently with the long-range defensive missiles that were to be placed in Poland and the associated radar in the Czech Republic for years. And it is not a question where there would be excessive resources having to be committed to missile defense in order to continue to pursue both concurrently. If that was the case, then why would the administration just make an arbitrary decision, at least arbitrary from my point of view, to reduce the overall funding for the missile defense program? I think that that funding decision for the upcoming fiscal year that starts on October 1st by the administration shows some lack of sympathy or some antipathy towards the missile defense exercise altogether, and again, in favor of an agenda of pursuing aggressive arms control. So those are my concerns with regard to the administration's decision. It doesn't mean that we can't use what the administration is proposing and make the Standard Missile 3 and the sea-based systems all that they can be from a technological perspective, but the administration has to put its money where its mouth is, both literally and figuratively. And I appreciate the opportunity to discuss this issue.
Unbelievable. College teachers playing with military weapons. Thanks for the report, Baker. I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
You know, we all remember 9/11. Our next guest is a hero. He was one of the first responders. He survived both towers collapsing and horrendous injuries, and yet still volunteers his time with the Knights of Columbus and raises money for other first responders. His new book is American by Choice, and he tells the story about growing up the son of immigrants to living with the aftermath of 9/11. Captain Al Fuentes, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. How you doing? Thank you for having me on today.
Give us a little background on your book.
You know, I did write the book American by Choice, and the reason well, that book was written because of, you know, the my doctors had told me to write some, put your thoughts down there to kind of, you know, get rid of some of the feelings that I was having. And the reason I made it American by Choice is because I'm an immigrant. I was born in South America, Ecuador, and therefore that American by Choice title. We came here in 1960 with my parents and my brother and two sisters, and it was a tough life at that time. You know, my parents were immigrants that couldn't get a job, and so we moved from Harlem, and we moved to Woodside, New York, in Queens, and that's where I grew up, and it's a blue-collar neighborhood, which really gave me. You know, we were either cops, firemen, or construction workers, and it was a really blue-collar type of neighborhood. And I became a fireman, and I learned a lot of my my character was developed there. And I have a love of country and a love of community, and that's where I joined the Knights of Columbus at that point. And I'm still a member there.
Well, what were some of your experiences on 9/11?
Well, I was involved in 9/11. I was the acting battalion chief of the Marine Division, and on that fateful day, I responded to the attacks on the World Trade Center. Moving on, I survived the North Tower collapse, and the South Tower collapse, and I went back into to get some individuals that were trapped in what was left of the Marriott, and the North Tower came down and. Buried me, and I was buried for a couple of hours. I was eventually, I did give some transmissions that I was trapped. Eventually, I was found, I was extricated, and I was transported, and I was put in Jersey City Medical Center, where I was put into a drug-induced coma. My scalp was off, and my left lung collapsed. They were both burnt, and I received a brain injury, and I received some physical injuries, numerous physical injuries. 9 ribs were broken, and so my recovery has been long, and in the process of that, I guess this life-changing event has influenced me. I've always been a given person, but it has influenced me so much more that I've been looking to give back, make sense of my survival and, you know, the opportunities that I've been given. And being a member of the Knights of Columbus for almost 40 years now, they have always shown me the way. So that's basically the, a short synopsis of what went on. There's quite a bit more.
Where did you get your sense of giving and your duty from? From who, your parents?
Well, that's a great question, and I would be lying if it wasn't for my mother who passed away 2 years ago. She was always a giving person, and she taught me well to give what, you know, there's so many people that need so much, and we have so much, and it was funny because even at a time when we didn't have hardly anything, you know, we all lived in one room, and, our first clothes came from the Salvation Army when we first came to this country. That's all we could afford, and it was really tough getting food on the table. But even then, my mother would say, you know, we do have a lot, and, you know, and we have each other, and you have to give back. And then over the years, I obviously took that to heart. And then just seeing my neighborhood in Woodside was just incredible. Everybody rallies, for each other, and we learn to give each other. And then the same thing with the Knights of Columbus. So I think it's a combination, really, of my upbringing and appreciating what I have now and what I didn't have before, and also with my upbringing with the neighborhood of Woodside.
And how are you doing now, Captain?
Well, you know, I'll never be the same as pre-9/11, but I'm not bad. I the glass is half full. I was always trying to be an optimist, but I'm hurting. I'd be lying if I wasn't. Physically, I have my limitations on some of the injuries that I had, but I also have some mental injuries, meaning that the events that happened and losing so many people that I knew, and to watching the civilians making those decisions from the towers was really hard, you know, for a first responder, for a firefighter from the FDNY to take, because we would do anything to try and help out anybody. So I'm a happy man in the sense that, you know, I'm with my family and I have my wife and my kids, and I'm able to give back and hopefully leave this world a little better. But recovery is still going on. It would always go on.
What would be the one message you would like our listeners to learn from your life?
Wow. You know, I guess I would have to say to embrace ourselves, to love life, to embrace our neighbors, and to be the best person we can be, and to make a difference, to try and leave this world a little better than you find it, and to basically just be an individual that doesn't use the word I that much, you know, that it's not about I, it's about we, and I'm a big believer in that, and the more you give, actually, unbelievably enough, the more you get back. But that would be my message, that we live in a wonderful, wonderful country, and really it's a wonderful world, and we need to understand that and to help our neighbors.
Well, what is your charity group all about?
You know, part of my giving is to my organization that I founded, was the PatriotGroup.org. And the PatriotGroup.org is a 501c3 nonprofit, and nobody gets paid. 100% goes to help first responders in this new mission that we have, that we operate on, this combat-like environment. But, you know, obviously I do some fundraisings here and there, but my funding really comes mostly from my book, American by Choice, and any donations that I have. But and you know, that's the way I cope, is to give back. And all I can say is that the Knights of Columbus have really led me in the direction they've always have. I mean, their initiative for volunteerism that they pursued, it has been wonderful, making the connections where anybody who wants to volunteer can actually go into that and put themselves in an organization that kind of fits their needs. And I think that's just such a wonderful thing. And I'm really proud to be a Knights of Columbus member. And I'm going to do anything I can for them.
Captain Fuentes, thank you for everything you've done, and thank you for sharing your story with us on the Savage Nation.
It was my pleasure. I just thank you for the opportunity to share some of my thoughts and to share the ideas of the Knights of Columbus.
Savage.
I want you to listen to Gordon Brown, the man who was behind my being banned from Britain, as he lies about the release of the Lockerbie bomber.
There was no deal. I can give you an absolute and unconditional assurance. There was no deal on oil. There was no deal on anything else. There was no double dealing. There was no conspiracy. There was no prior agreement or anything. This was a decision that we did not have control of, because it was made under the law of our country by the devolved Scottish administration. And I just want to assure people there was no deal.
And then Andrea Mitchell asks Joe Lieberman if he believes Gordon Brown.
Do you take him at his word?
Oh, yes. I mean, look, the United Kingdom is probably our closest ally in the world. Gordon Brown is our friend. You hear a denial like that, you just got to accept it.
No, you don't have to accept it, Joe. He's a leftist. And speaking of leftist liars, here's a UN speech you can't miss.
We know the future will be forged by deeds and not simply words. Speeches alone will not solve our problems. It will take persistent action. So for those who question the character and cause of my nation, I ask you to look at the concrete actions we have taken in just 9 months. On my first day in office, I prohibited, without exception or equivocation, the use of torture by the United States of America. I ordered the prison at Guantanamo Bay closed, and we are doing the hard work of forging a framework to combat extremism within the rule of law.
Well, Mr. Obama, you shouldn't have let those terrorists loose on the world. Terrorists like Gaddafi, who got to speak to the UN for 2 hours, should have been banned.
Why are we against Taliban? Why are we against Afghanistan? Who's Taliban? If Taliban wants to make a religious state, okay, like the Vatican. Vatican does constitute a danger against us? No. It's a religious country, very peaceful. And if Taliban wants to make an Islamic Emirate, who said that Taliban is an enemy? Those terrorists who hit New York, the city that were named, are they a Taliban? Are they from Afghan? They're neither Afghan nor Taliban. Then why Iraq? Why Afghanistan?
God, I don't know who's worse, the enemy without or the enemy within. Okay, moving on. Manson wanted to see a race war. He said it was coming. Helter Skelter he got from the White Album of the Beatles. So you listen to all that music and you say, what does it have to do with the politics today? Everything. The same mentality is now running America. If you actually looked at the czars that Obama has put in power, their philosophy, their political philosophy matches that of 1969. I'm not accusing them of being mass murderers, comma, dot, dot, dot. But I'm not accusing them of not being in favor of doing certain things to their political enemies that have never been done in America before. Dot, dot, dot. Read the Khmer Rouge. Pol Pot. Nice guy. Little professor. Cambodia. Goes to Paris. Studies Marxism. Comes back. He wants to create nationalized, socialized medicine in Cambodia. The middle class rebels. Pol Pot says, naughty, naughty boy and girl. This is not how it's done in the new Cambodia. In the new Cambodia, even the poor get health care. Even the poor get government care. Even the poor get this care, that care, hair care, your care, my care, his care. Then you're going to wind up in a death camp, mountain of skulls, 3 million skulls. How did that happen? follow the bouncing skull. It started with a nice man who only wanted to do good for his people. When the people didn't want to go along with his doing good, his do-gooding, the road to you know where is paved with good intentions, when they didn't want to go along with it, they were forced to go along with it against their will, Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid. And so they still didn't go along with it, so he unleashed the amoral young teenagers of Cambodia, gave them AK-47s and Khmer Rouges, red scarves, and they were told to beat up the middle class. Anyone who wore glasses, they were told, was a bad person. Anyone who wore eyeglasses was educated and therefore a counter-revolutionary. So the middle class disappeared in Cambodia. They were beaten to death, worked to death, shot to death, killed to death, tortured to death. And Khmer Rouge, the Khmer Rouge did it. They were young communists. They were idealists run by a nice little man who was a professor who had gone to Paris to study Marxism, which is why you have to understand the danger you are in. We have a neo-com administration. I tried with you now for months to say it's neo-Marxist. You can't do it because the hemorrhoid with the ears didn't steal that one yet. You don't use the word. Bush and his people were called neocon, 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 code word for Jew. Neocon, neocon, neocon this, neocon that. Israel did it. Israel blew up 9/11. Israel blew up the World Trade Center. Jew, 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 neocon, neocon, yeah, 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 yeah. Can't say Jew, can't say that, but you can't say neocon. So they did it for years, the left did it. Neocon, 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 neocon. It was really anti-Semitism. Jews did it again. So now they're onto something new. Now you have the other side of the coin. Now you have Obama surrounded by neo-Marxists. Almost every one of his special advisors at some point in their life, or even currently, are avowedly communist, socialist, anarchist types. But instead of calling them by their proper designation, which is neo-com, C-O-M, which would be a nice bookend to neo-con, C-O-N, the media doesn't do that because they're all one and the same. Government Media Complex, beware the Government Media Complex, 1998, Michael Savage, Commonwealth Club. Another speech, genius, unrecognized, done anyway in the archives. Beware the Government Media Complex. Now, some have stolen it and made it into Beware the Democrat Media Complex. Okay, but again, no credit, don't care, doesn't matter. Lao Tzu said, doesn't matter who gets the credit for it so long as your ideas are being disseminated. Thank you, Lao Tzu. I appreciate it. When I see you in the next world, I hope you have a nice barbecue chicken waiting for me. You know what I'm saying? That's all. Now, speaking of barbecue chicken, I got to tell you that I had the best barbecue chicken of my life at my barbecue. I had eight very close friends over at my house, and we barbecued. But the beauty here is that I didn't do the barbecuing, so the food was good. I am the world's worst person in front of a grill. I've tried it. I've tried to do the bone on me thing. It doesn't work, you know. It doesn't work. I burn the chicken, either burnt on the outside, raw on the inside. I can't do it. The meat is no good. So my friends own the best Chinese restaurant in the world, Shanghai 1930, Cindy and George. They agree to barbecue for me. I got to tell you, if you haven't had a five-star chef barbecue at your house, you haven't eaten yet. This was so good, it was unbelievable. It was so good, I didn't give any to the dog. Teddy got nothing. Nobody left anything over. The poor dogs. And by the way, there were four dogs there. I loved it. There was Teddy and Tasha, the two little 10-pound poodle, 2-pound poodle. Then there was some other dog called a Pooey, a big black dog with, like, curls. She was there. Then my other friends had a dog, like mixed stock Dalmatian dog. No one, they didn't argue with each other. There wasn't even, it was a bark, a woof. They didn't fight. They didn't growl because they're not liberal dogs. Then liberal dogs bark at each other and try to steal each other's food. They undermine each other. But conservative dogs kind of hang out. They got along. It was unbelievable. It was very nice. Then at the end of the day, we got in the boat. Some of us did. And we went up to the Golden, to the Bay Bridge and saw the construction. I said, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. So we got on my boat and we went out there. And the pictures I took, they were unbelievable. The light was just perfect. Remember I used to do a Savage photo thing on my website? I'd go around the city. I'm going to do it again. I'll start posting pictures of the real San Francisco as opposed to the fake one. The city that Gavin Newsom doesn't want anyone to see. Like the bum puking in a mailbox. The bum harassing a tourist. The bum scratching typhus lice onto a tourist. That kind of thing. Because it's time to end this. I can't stand it anymore. I don't know why these people are permitted to destroy the city. And I mean the politicians, because the bums don't want to be in the gutter. The bums want to be cared for in a state-run facility where they can be given the care that they need. They're mentally ill or they're criminal. They don't belong on the street. Homelessness is a charade put on by the liberals. It was created by Governor Brown's father, who released them into the streets. Edmund Pat Brown did this to us. He opened up the mental hospitals. He dumped them on the streets of California. And the state has never been the same, nor the nation. All because a liberal governor said that we can no longer house the mentally ill. It's against their civil rights. Release them into the streets. Here we have them, open wards, worse than Calcutta in the streets of America. And the most horrendous example is San Francisco. Now, luckily, I mean, I know where to avoid, where to go to not see them, but it's pretty horrible that they let human beings live like this, the liberals. And by the way, if you think they're not spending money on them, you're crazy. $200-$400 million a year from the city government is spent on homelessness. Homelessness. What do they do, buy cardboard boxes for them with that money? Where does that $400 million a year go? Turkey sandwiches, sir? Would you like a tuna, turkey, ham, ham on rye, ham on toast, ham on sourdough, ham on sweet dough? What would you like, sir? May I serve you, sir? We are here in the business to serve you. We owe you something. It is our duty to serve you, the thousands of little bureaucrats working for Gavin Newsom, who serve the homeless and serve the other needy communities, including the illegal alien, including the illegal alien drug runner, including the illegal alien drug dealer, including everyone except the taxpayer. All why? 1969, it goes back to Helter Skelter. It goes back to drugged up psychos running the world off the cliff.
Savage.